budgets. Why can't New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg drive a bus? If he sits on a stack of old phone books, I bet he can see over the steering wheel.
Everything that happens on this border that's illegal is all about the money. There's money for illegal drug, and there's money for bringing over bad baloney from Mexico.
I am only one of the 100 people honored. Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany. Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel. And of course, Sarah Blakely, the inventor of Spanx. She perhaps has shaped our world more than anyone on this list.
How many of the 13,000 lobbyists on K Street really are lobbying for poor people?
Then poor people Mary should Ryan, get their own super PAC. Poor people need their own super PAC.
And the cash will come from where?
Each other. They should throw a block party.
My first choice was Mitch Daniels, and it wasn't a secret.
Well, I mean, that's not so bad. His first choice was Mitch Daniels. Robbie's my second choice.
My second was Paul Ryan.
My fourth was the ghost of Dwight Eisenhower. My fifth was the character of Ron Swanson on NBC's Parks and Recreation. Obama himself visited the famed demilitarized zone last month, disguised as a bird watcher.
Look north! That's... What do you got? No, that's a woman from the 50s! She's getting attacked! I can't... Mr. President, you're going to look the other way! Look the... yes, that... What?
Brian Williams, NBC, is a news anchor. Punched a Girl Scout in a wheelchair. What would you say to Brian now, because he's done this terrible thing, and it is on cell phone footage?
You have to admit that it was a terrible thing, that you somehow lost your mind, perhaps because the ratings weren't exactly as they should have.
Go to rehab. Go to rehab, Williams! Go to rehab!
What is your title at GSA?
Mr. Chairman, on the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer.
It's your job title. How could that incriminate you? Just your...
Oh. Mr. Neely, did you know that people who respectfully decline to answer on the advice of their counsel eat duty?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer.
I used to watch Laurel and Hardy, the Three Stooges, even the Keystone Cops.
How old are you?
Come on, much closer, much closer.
That is a solid bit. That is grade A uncle humor, but still.
I mean, this is not a radical statement. To go back to a tax rate that we had after the Second World War up until 1980.
So you're a socialist.
Is not a person, it doesn't think. People in it think. And for them, it is legitimate to create Terminator technology so that farmers are not able to save their seeds. Seeds that will destroy themselves through a suicide gene. Seeds that are designed to only produce crop in one season. You really need to have a brutal mind. It's a war against evolution to even think in those terms. But quite clearly, profits are so much higher in their minds.
The profit motive, which drove Fussy to accomplish so much, may bring out the evil as well as the good.
My work spans all industry sectors. I mean, I virtually have worked for, like, I'd say 25% of the Fortune 500. I've posed as an investment banker. I've posed as a venture capitalist. I set up front companies that are executive recruiting firms. Essentially, I'm a spy. I'll locate your employees, and I will tell them that I'm calling from Acme Recruiting Agency, and that I've got a job that pays them considerably more than what they're paying. Would they mind meeting me for an interview? And when the executive shows up, what he doesn't realize is I'm actually debriefing him on behalf of a competitor, and that there is no job, and that the office that he's at has been rented, and the picture on my desk of my family is a phony, and it's all just a big elaborate ruse to glean competitive information from him. I don't feel any guilt. It's, you know what? I mean, you have to expect that guys like me are out there. We're predators.
We are the majority, and the poor and working poor make up the majority of this planet. So the decisions that they make come from not the reality that exists throughout the world.
How much is enough? You know, how much is enough? If you are a billionaire, would it be okay just to be a half a billionaire? Wouldn't it be okay for your company to make a little less money if it meant...
When I bought those two airplane tickets for Phil Knight and myself to fly to Indonesia, I was prepared for him to say, okay, let's go.
Oh, no, not a chance.
Huh?
Can manipulate consumers. Is it ethical? I don't know. But our rule is to move products.
It's always going to be there, so you may as well have faith in it.
There are those who intend that one day everything will be owned by somebody.
Within less than 10 years, a handful of global companies will own directly or through license the actual genes that make up the evolution of our species.
I said, you know, this is news. This is stuff people need to know. And he said, we just paid $3 billion for these television stations. The news is what we say it is.
Capitalism today commands the towering heights and has displaced politics and politicians as the new high priests and reigning oligarchs of our system.
Does there need to be some measure of accountability?
Yes.
And I think the business community recognizes that.
Okay, guys, enough bullshit.
Vampire Slayer
on Occupy Bubble and Occupy Yourself Podcast Radio
here in sunny Buffalo, New York. 6.5 mile drive from New York City. 10 hour drive from New York City if you're Mr. J, who likes to take a lot of breaks and he likes to debate everything. So he'll debate you on everything and anything. That's why he's here on this podcast today. Again, I'm Buffy Lowe, joined by Mr. J, and special guest today, Neil Daniel, local author of many, many things, and intellectual, and immigrant, right? Am I right? Immigrant?
Absolutely.
Has some very original insights on living in the U.S. So we're gonna be chatting about a lot of different things, and we thank you for your patience in listening to our funky music while we're getting stuff set up. We're gonna be right with you in just about 15 seconds. Great. Well, that didn't take long. We're back already. As I said, just a few seconds. So today, we mentioned in the description of the podcast, we're going to talk about the United States. The United States from the point of view of people from other countries, living in other countries or living here, coming here, who can sometimes be like the alien who lands on the planet and sees the Earthlings for the first time. Are we Earthlings? Not to say that Americans are Earthlings, but I don't know what Americans are. But anyway, we're going to talk with Neil Daniel, who has a lot of very intelligent, insightful things to say. Mr. J, do you want to share that popcorn with Mr. Daniel?
I made the offer.
You did make the offer? Okay. I just want to make sure the popcorn gets distributed evenly and democratically. On this podcast, we must share our popcorn. Yes, it's very important. Again, today is April 29th, 2012. It's Sunday evening, and it's maybe it's almost 20 after 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Very exciting. Okay, well, Mr. Daniel, Neil Daniel, I know I'd heard you talk about coming to this country from, was it, did you say Trinidad?
From Trinidad.
And what really intrigued me, too, was your story about living in Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
And how you saw things change there, particularly, I think you were talking about the American corporations that came in.
Right.
And made changes in how things were being done, in particular the work environment and perhaps other things. Can you
mm-hmm.
talk anything about that? And like, what was life, do you remember what life was like before that happened? Were you, I mean, is this something that's happened recently that you would have remembered what life was like before the American corporations came in and took over?
Well, it actually happened when I was a child. And the first thing that I remember about the arrival of American corporations was Grace Chemical Company.
The Grace Chemical Company?
And that corporation came to Trinidad and set up a plant. An ammonia plant. What they were manufacturing was artificial fertilizer. And
using ammonia?
Yeah, they use ammonia. It's one of the ingredients. The raw material that they were using was actually natural gas, because Trinidad was and still is rich in natural gas. There was a high grade crude oil for a while, but I think that has kind of been sucked out of the ground. So now there's lots of natural gas. So back then, the Grace Corporation set up this plant to manufacture artificial fertilizer. And what I remember as a child is driving by with my dear old dad, and they had planted an experimental plot of sugarcane, which was the old colonial crop, money crop, cash crop. Big industry, and the company had planted this demonstration plot of sugarcane that had been fertilized with this artificial fertilizer. And I remember that my father was very impressed by the results, because the cane was, you know, like 10 feet tall and huge. So, yeah, so he was really impressed. He told me, he said, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
This father of mine was a strange man, because he would never get on an airplane. He would never have his picture taken, except in official events. He never went to a doctor. The first time he had to go have an x-ray done, I remember, he came to me quite on the, as they say here, on the down low. He came to me and he said, tell me about this x-ray business. What is it?
Oh, really? So he wasn't familiar with x-rays or modern medicine,
right.
I guess, in general.
Right, right. But yet he was really impressed. He was blown away by what they had done with the sugar cane and the artificial fertilizer. And that was the beginning of the end.
Mm.
Because from there, it was all downhill.
In terms of, you know, like the U.S.
In terms of U.S. corporations coming in to exploit the natural resources and the labor. Well, there was oil. So, you know, there was eventually, I mean, I grew up with British Petroleum being the main thing. But BP was kind of moving out then, and the Americans were moving in. That was a process that began during World War II, because when the British were in trouble, they did a deal with the Americans, and they got this destroyers for bases, and they gave them a base. The British government gave the U.S. government a base in Chagaramas, a U.S. base, a naval base, which was used as a refueling station during the war, because Trinidad had oil and so on and so on. And that was it. And I grew up with the struggle, like the oil field workers had to really fight to get anything. and the union movement became a very strong political force.
In Trinidad.
Eventually, a political party was formed, and this was in the 60s, and I was just graduating from high school then. And this political party was formed on a pro-independence movement, independence from the old colonial powers, British. But there was a transition then from the British colonial power to the U.S. colonial power, which was something more subtle. And it was really the, there were two kinds of ways in which the U.S. came into the country. And one was through corrupting the politicians, corrupting the local businessmen, mm-hmm. and dominating culturally.
Now, how did they corrupt the politicians and the businessmen?
Well, I can only, I'm in bribes, bribery. I mean, I am not privy, wasn't privy to much.
Well, what do you mean exactly by corrupting them? You mean corrupting them as far as allowing politicians to let them do whatever they wanted, even
exactly.
though it hurt the people?
Exactly. I'll give you one example that I know of, which was Texaco had a refinery in Trinidad. It was, when it was built at Point of Pier, it was the largest refinery in the world when it was built. That was many years ago. I was a child. I found out, you know, I grew up, I graduated high school, and one of my friends from high school went to work for the government as an accountant. And part of his job was to go to Texaco as a representative of the tax part of the tax department of the government. And he told me one day, we were just relaxing, and he said, "Man, I don't know what to do." I said, What's the matter?" He said, I don't know what to do. I'm flabbergasted." So I said, "Come on, what's the problem?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Look, I want to tell you something. The government of Trinidad and Tobago is told by Texaco how much taxes they are going to get. We are not able, I am supposed to be the auditor, and I am not allowed to see any books. Mm. I am just given a figure. Mm-hmm. I'm given a printout and say that says, this is how much we owe your government in taxes, in royalty payments and whatever."
So the company, the corporation, decided how many taxes they were going to pay?
Right. How much they were going to pay, and when they were going to pay, and if they were going to pay at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's one example that I know of. Now, from the outside, I could see, you know, it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. What is it? Mm-hmm. At one point, I decided that I wanted to do farming, agriculture. Well, that was impossible. Mm-hmm. The local food production was set up in such a way, as an example, there were chicken farms. Mm-hmm. But the chicken farmers actually worked for U.S. corporations, the feed corporations, who would send representatives down, and they'd say, "Okay, here's the deal. We're going to give you a contract. Right. We're going to supply you with the baby chicks. We're going to supply you with the feed. You supply the infrastructure, the pens, and so on, and we're going to tell you how to raise these chickens."
And what happened if somebody wanted to say, "No, I'm going to do it myself without you"? What would happen?
Well, nobody would buy your chickens. This is what I tried to do. But you can't compete. You're a small farmer producing good stuff, mm-hmm. and you can't compete with these guys. You know, they flood the market with chicken for 50 cents a pound.
So they could sell the chickens more cheaply because
the chickens are they were all GMO chickens.
Oh, right, mass produced.
Yeah.
In terrible conditions.
I mean, you're talking about a pen, and the rule, well, there wasn't a rule, but what they did was to max out the chicken production, they would allow 1 square foot per chicken. That was the head count, 1 square foot per chicken. And I've been on these farms. I've seen what they do. It's just, you know,
yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And then the artificial fertilizers. I mean, oh my God. And then, you know, the thing is that the whole, this structure is not sustained only by force. Mm-hmm. It's not sustained only by corporations, by bribery.
Mm-hmm.
It's also sustained by this insidious, clever advertising
mm-hmm.
thing that they do. The cultural part of the American Empire project.
So the corporations, they have the money to provide advertisements.
Right.
I'm sure you probably have commercials and on television there in
right.
Trinidad, and
yeah.
So they can afford to advertise to launch major advertising campaigns.
And they lie.
And
they lie and they tell people, you know, this is okay, and everything. It's just like Trinidad is actually now very much an extension of the United States. It's
mm-hmm.
quite sort of like like a dominion,
mm-hmm.
like a colony.
Oh, so does the United States have some sort of authority over Trinidad then? Or, I mean, legally?
Not
or is
legally,
it just because of the...
Not legally, but again, it walks like a duck. It quacks like a duck.
Mm-hmm.
I recently found out this, that there was an article that I read, and some interesting information. The Trinidad government suddenly decided to build a huge 6-lane highway from the north going straight down into an area in the south, a particular area in the south. 6-lane highway.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
What's going
on? Necessary.
What's wrong with this?
Mm-hmm.
And there was some other work with port and stuff, and then there was present in Trinidad somebody who from America who was connected with the Alberta tar sands operation. I don't remember his name, but the point is this, that it seems like all the indications are that they're about to start a tar sands recovery operation in Trinidad.
What is tar sands?
Tar sands is actually an oil-bearing sand or shale.
Okay.
And it is a new development in oil recovery from mining. It's a type of mining.
Tar sand, is that TARSAND?
Correct.
Is that similar to fracking?
No, it's not. It's not fracking. Tar sands is an open cast mining technique. They dig the sand up with huge machines, and then the sand is processed with water and chemicals to extract the oil from it. And the oil is in there, it's in the sand, it's mixed in with the sand in a very heavy tar kind of material. The area they're building this superhighway to is a tar sands area. You may not be familiar, but in that area in Trinidad, there is a very famous lake called the Pitch Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are two in that part of the world, one in Trinidad and one somewhere in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
The Pitch Lake is a really remarkable thing. It's a lake of pitch, tar.
Is this a human made?
Soft.
No,
it's a naturally occurring phenomenon. The tar came up like a spring,
okay.
Bubble up from the ground, and it filled this depression, a huge thing. It's about, I don't know, maybe 30 acres or so of this expanse of this.
Probably similar to the La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same phenomenon.
Right, and it's called La Brea. La Brea, the Spanish, the pitch. And then the Spaniards used to use it to cork their ships and whatnot. So this is a tar sands area. And, I mean, this is going on. They're kind of making the moves, and people who are watching, understanding what's going on, can see what's going on, but we're helpless to prevent it because, you know, are you familiar with John Perkins, that name, John Perkins?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the name.
Oh, yes.
The economic hitman?
Yes.
Oh, yes, right, yeah. Right.
Well, that's what happened in Trinidad. That is what happened in Trinidad. I mean, I lack the evidence,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
the proof is in the results. I mean, mm-hmm. I worked Amoco. So Amoco comes to Trinidad.
Amoco.
Okay.
No, just for.
Yeah, I know. I understand. I have an accent, and they may not get it.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, the American oil company, huge thing, and they're in Trinidad, and they set up an operation where they will not hire labor directly. They will bribe the government, and they will bribe some businessman. So the government looks the other way, and this businessman, so-called businessman, my mind, nothing but a criminal, you know, predator, who might have well been a drug smuggler, except that he had this fantastic opportunity to set up shop with Amoco. And so they won't hire anybody directly, and they get him to provide contract labor to go out to the offshore rigs and work. Mm-hmm. And the rigs are supervised by expats, mm-hmm. which is American supervisors who are flown in from wherever, Texas or wherever they're finding them.
So they're not hiring the locals from Trinidad?
They hire a few locals, and they pay them well. They hire a few locals and they pay them well to be the
supervisors.
Well,
liaison is
a better term. So you would have, like, there would be one local guy on a platform, one, mm-hmm. and they would switch him out. One who was an Amoco employee. There'd be one local Amoco employee on the platform.
Okay,
and he would be reporting back, and you know, they tell him what to do, and he tells the supervisors here what to do. So it's, you know.
So the economic hitman, so you think that the U.S. government, possibly someone from the government might have approached the government in Trinidad and said, this is what we want from you, you know, we'll give you some money, we'll loan some money to you, or we'll help you in this way, but you've got to do this for us?
Not directly from the government.
Mm-hmm.
The government, the U.S. government works indirectly. For example, you have the IMF, mm-hmm. right, and the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So they come into Trinidad and they say, well, we're going to help you develop industry.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to loan you $1 billion
mm-hmm.
to develop infrastructure. You need a good telephone system.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an American company that will come in and set up a telephone system for you, and we'll lend you the money to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who is going to repay that loan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Trinidadian peasant is going to repay that loan.
Right.
The 99% is going to repay the loan.
Right, exactly.
But who's going to benefit from the loan? Well, the few local businessmen who are, you know, who collude with the American corporation, who colludes with the World Bank and the IMF, and who have the tacit approval of the U.S. government. In 1970, there was an attempt, the first attempt, to by the 99% to really shake things up, and
in Trinidad,
and that year the U.S. government sent a warship to cruise into the Gulf.
Mm.
You know, so they parked a battleship with Marines aboard in the Gulf until the local politicians were able to regain control of things.
Very crafty. Hey guys, we're going to take a little bit of a break and do a sound check. Make sure that we're recording okay, and give everybody a chance to rest their voices for a few seconds. We'll be back probably in about 30 seconds, all right? So stay tuned. We just did a little sound check here, and we're getting ready to return for more discussion. Fascinating discussion about how the U.S. is viewed by people from other countries and how our politics and our policies affect people in other parts of the world, and it's something that we Americans don't think about very much. And I wonder, let me ask you, I mean, I have a lot of questions to ask, but do the people in Trinidad think that their country is the greatest country in the world the way that Americans do? Is there a lot of, we live in the greatest country in the world, this is the land of opportunity, is the mindset different there?
That's a hard question to answer. Trinidad is an island, and people have always looked out. Mm-hmm. It's also an island that was populated by immigrants. Mm-hmm. It's a country of immigrants. There are East Indian immigrants, Chinese immigrants, and African immigrants. The Africans, well, those people came either as slaves or indentured labor. Mm-hmm. The native population was murdered early on by the Spaniards.
Is the prevailing language there Spanish, then? Or are there a few different languages spoken?
People used to speak Spanish and French and English. Those were languages that were pretty common in Trinidad when my parents were children. I grew up after the Second World War, and under the change from the old to the American culture. And all those things went out. All those, you know, the languages, the Spanish and the French, those died. It wasn't passed on. There was an interruption in the history by the American invasion, because it was a cultural invasion.
When would you say the American invasion began, or is it possible to say exactly when or approximately when?
You could use different events to mark it. I mean, I think that perhaps it began with the establishment of that Grace Corporation. That might have been one of the beachheads, and Texaco with the refinery at Point of Pier.
Was that like in the 60s or?
Yeah. Yeah, this would be all in the 60s.
It's interesting because here in the States, the 60s and 70s were a time when people were advocating for social change and all these movements for freedom and liberty. But while all that was going on, underneath it all was this anti-democratic, imperialistic, these imperialistic actions mm-hmm. being taken by the...
You know, this is the thing that I think that most Americans have no idea about what goes on in these other countries and how things. There's a song that I really like by Sarah Thompson. Mm-hmm. Is it for freedom? Mm. And she asked the question, in that song.
I'm going to try to find that song.
Yeah,
can you hold this mic for a second here? And Mr. J, can you hold that mic? Now that mic is the mic we're recording the podcast on, and that mic is the live mic. But while you're, Mr. J, did you have any questions you wanted to ask Neil as well? Because I have more questions for him, but you were kind of...
Okay, yes. You're describing the... these economic experiments with agriculture.
Yeah.
And I'm, and of course now we're getting more publicity, movies and all kinds of things where people are being made aware of how much the same system prevails.
Right.
Here in this country.
Exactly.
Now I'm wondering, time frames, and we may not have the answer, but mm-hmm. it's a curious question. Might those that work done in Trinidad and perhaps other places in that time frame, may they have been the laboratory, the first stage before we expanded it and started doing it here? I wonder.
That's a thought. I have always felt this way, that the American people weren't aware of what was being done in other places. And I thought...
Oh, yeah, we're incredibly naive.
I thought, you know what, though? The chickens are going to come home to roost.
Yeah,
I thought that it would only be a matter of time before the corporations realized, well, you know, hey, like, okay, I went to work when I was 19, Hess Oil came to Trinidad and they recruited me. They offered me a job. I wasn't looking for a job. I had a job. I was working for Grace, Grace Corporation.
Another American corporation.
So Hess Oil came and they said, hey, you're a smart young fellow. You want a job? So I thought, well, doing what? Where?
Mm-hmm.
How? When? And they said, well, you'd come to St. Croix to work on our new refinery. So I was 19. I didn't have anything better to do. And I said, sure. And they paid me. They said, well, we'll pay you, I think it was $5 an hour, $5.25 an hour. And to me, that was okay money. It was okay money, you know. But later on, I realized that an American refinery operator was getting, I don't know, maybe like back then $15 or $20 an hour.
Ah, huh. And how did you find that out? Did you ask somebody how much they were getting paid, or how did you find out?
Well, you know, I was in St. Croix, and St. Croix is a U.S. Virgin Island, and I was as interested in the nightlife as I was in my job.
Of course.
You know, so you meet people, you know, you meet people and people talk and they say, well, hey, you know the job you're doing, how much are you going to pay? They're ripping you off, man.
It's interesting because a lot of these corporations, they tell their employees not to talk about their salaries.
Right,
they really try
to
discourage, and there's a lot of speculation that's why, because they're paying. And I also had another thought. Are there corporations that are based in Trinidad? I mean, are there Trinidadians?
Yeah.
Trinidadians
actually,
who
there are two islands that comprise this political entity called Trinidad and Tobago, the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. Tobago is much smaller than Trinidad. Trinidad is pretty small. So sometimes people will refer to themselves as Trinbagonians. Or Trinnies.
Well, do the Trinnies start their own corporations?
Yeah,
or
they
can
do.
Only
they do on the American model, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that they, you know, they mimic men.
Mm-hmm.
They're mimic men.
Right.
And so they.
Are there laws in Trinidad like that regulate corporations at all, or is it like the United States where they've decided corporations are people?
Yeah. I couldn't. I couldn't answer. I couldn't give you an accurate answer. My impression is that they do whatever they want. I mean, there's a river that runs through Marabella, and the Texaco refinery been dumping stuff in that river for many years, and that river now is just a sewer of nasty oil and, you know, petroleum and chemicals.
Do people ever protest over there? Do they are there any protests or resistance movements against the American corporations?
Very small and very weak.
Is there an Occupy?
No, I wish there were. Trinidad, like I was telling you, in the 70s, there was an attempt to organize a movement, but the leaders were murdered. The leaders were actually murdered.
By whom?
By the police. Whoever, I don't know, you know. Yeah, probably, you know. Probably. They were murdered. And they were they were criminalized, you know, so the government declares all these people are nothing but a bunch of criminals. They robbed a bank. They held up a gas station, and we're after them. And then they run them down and shoot them to death, and the American warship is sitting off there in the Gulf. There were protests, and the protests were very brutally repressed. You know, unfortunately, I missed being a part of the protest, but I had friends who had their arms broken and, you know, their skulls cracked and so on by police.
I wanted to ask you too, another time when I had met you and you had talked about what you had seen happen to people working for the American corporations in Trinidad. You described the injuries you saw them get and how they were overworked. Can you talk a little bit about that? Can you describe what you saw and... Do you remember a time when, I mean, probably you don't. It sounds like this happened when you first started working. That I just wonder whether there were small locally owned businesses or there were alternative places to work that treated their employees differently in Trinidad.
I think not. I think there never was a time when the Trinidad worker sort of had a fair shake. I don't think there ever was that time.
So even before the American corporations came in, was Trinidad dominated before then? Was that when Spain was in power or Britain?
Britain.
So now is Trinidad still, you said that the United States pretty much controls Trinidad. Are they still technically, is Trinidad still technically a colony?
Yes.
It is independent of Britain, of Spain, of the U.S., technically speaking.
Yes. With a seat in the U.N. and as an independent country.
And I apologize for my ignorance on Trinidad. I feel like I'm coming across as a typical American who knows little about the world. But I actually am interested in what's happening in the world. I was wondering if you could describe again, as you had described to me in the past, about what you saw with the working conditions that you saw in Trinidad.
Sure. Well, first of all, the workers, we're talking about working on oil rigs, which are working Amoco wells. So this is an offshore operation. The well is owned by the Amoco Petroleum Corporation, and the oil coming out the ground or the gas coming out the ground is going to Amoco. The rig itself is owned by some American corporation, and they're under contract to Amoco. There are several corporate entities with people on board with different specialties. The rig crew, the actual drill crew, the men who actually put their bodies on the rig floor to handle the equipment, the guys who offload the boats, the supply boats, and handle the drill pipe and so on, those are all local guys. They are also, they don't have jobs. they have work, and they hired we. I was part of that. We would show up at the pickup point where the bus would leave for the chopper, and guys who were looking for work would all gather there, and the local liaison person who is now the labor contractor working for Amoco, he would pick the guys. Okay, say you. And everybody is there ready to work.
So he would just pick among them.
It's kind of like how they run labor ready here.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It reminds me of the day labor places here,
right,
that you see, and a lot of homeless people work for day labor places,
right,
people who are desperate.
So we would show up there, and we were all desperate for work. Because, you know, what you're going to do? This is what you're down to. And they would, the practice was that you'd go out there for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have 2 weeks work. And the other 2 weeks, they would not send you back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd be 2 weeks on. Maybe you would work 2 weeks out of every month. If you were lucky,
mm-hmm.
or if they liked you or something, you would work 2 weeks out of every month. But they would make sure that you never worked more than a certain number of consecutive days.
And why would they do that?
Because there was a labor law that said that if you worked more than that number of days, you were automatically an employee of that company.
And why did they not want you to be an employee of that company? Were they required to provide benefits or something?
Absolutely. Then there would be some minimal responsibility for vacation and, you know, stuff like that. And maybe there was something in the insurance policies that they would have and so on. So that was the basic thing. So now they have guys, they have a crew out on the rig, and, you know, you pretty much you do what needs to be done. You try to do the job. One time I remember, I think this was one of the stories I told you, that a tool got stuck down the hole. Now, they're drilling this well, and from time to time they have to lower survey tools, you know, different types of sensors that they would drop on a cable, drop it down the hole so they could see, perceive what's going on down in the hole. And this tool, on the way up, it got stuck. It got twisted in the hole and jammed. And they knew it wasn't that far down. I'm not sure how far down it was, maybe 50 feet or so. And they asked for volunteers to go down the hole. And they tied a rope around one guy's waist, and they lowered him down into the hole to free the tool. And he was able to do it. And when he came out, they gave him a pair of boots as a reward. I was, you know.
Were they fashionable boots? Like the kind you see on VH1 or MTV? I don't know. we do have a live listener, it's great to have listeners. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to make, we'd invite you to do that now or at any time. And, of course, if you just want to listen, that's great, too. Mr. J, did you have any questions? You've been fidgeting a lot during the interview.
Oh,
I thought maybe you had some ideas.
I don't know if I have any new ideas. I'm just listening to the details.
What I wanted to hear, too, more about, because I think when the last time when I'd spoken with you, you talked more about things that I thought you said you knew of people whose arms had been broken, who had been injured. Can you talk a little bit about that as well? About the different things? I mean,
yeah.
You just gave us one anecdote, but I'd like to hear more because I'm an American and I want more.
That really speaks to the desperation,
mm-hmm.
of the people. And there were guys who would deliberately put a finger. When the drill pipe was coming down, they would just deliberately leave a finger where the pipe would cut it off. And so
they would leave the finger.
Yeah.
You said someone's finger would be
cut off, right? And yeah, and then the guy would get some money for it, you know. He'd get
money for the finger?
You mean
they'd give him money to compensate him?
Yeah,
for the injury.
So you're saying that people would purposely do that?
They would purposely do it, yeah. Because nobody, you know, working on a rig like that, people died. You know, accidents. I mean, it's a hazardous situation.
Now, if somebody died, were their families compensated in any way, or was there any workers' comp for any of those people since they were not legal employees?
There was some workers' comp, but not a lot. It was small amounts. Like, if I remember correctly, the loss of a finger was, I think, $12,000 TT.
What's TT?
Trinidad and Tobago money.
Oh.
So that at the time, that was like, 12,000 would have been about $2,000 US, I guess. Yeah, $2,000 or $3,000 US. But guys would take that and, you know, try to get some piece of land, get a little garden going, or do something, you know.
We're going to take just a short break just to catch our breaths and drink a little liquid. And we'll be right back. Did you have something you want to say, Mr. J, before we go to the break? Or can you hold it?
That's good.
You hold that thought? Okay, we'll be back in a minute or two while we listen to this song, Is It for Freedom by Sarah Thompson.
Design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you
over fear?
Is it for freedom or a comfort?
Oh, wait, that's music by Sarah Thompson. Is it for freedom? Interesting video on YouTube, too. Very interesting. So we're just going to pause that, and we're going to continue our little conversation here. We'll go on for another 15 minutes or so because we kind of got started on the interview after 6, and Neil's able to stay a little bit longer, so that's really great. Okay, so yeah, is the biggest industry in Trinidad oil, then, would you say?
Yeah, it is.
And was that always true, or did that become true after the U.S. came in?
And that was always true. That was the source of the colonial powers' interest in Trinidad, and that was the source of the...
So that's why Spain and Great Britain and the U.S. had such an interest.
Well, yeah. I mean, originally they were all just looking for gold, you know, way back. You know, they were all just looking for gold. But, you know, they found, the Spaniards found the Pitch Lake, and that was useful. And during the war, the Second World War, Trinidad was a strategic point because... they had oil, and it's the southernmost island in the chain, in the Caribbean chain, and it's very close to Venezuela. It's like maybe 10 miles at the closest point of water between Trinidad and Venezuela. So it was a strategic point, a refueling point for ships and submarines, especially cruising in the southern waters, South American waters. And the oil was really, you know, oil is always significant geopolitically. Not that there was really significant amounts of oil in terms of world production, you know, small amounts, but still to the imperial powers, it was critical to control even that, you know. So oil has been the main industry.
Is it a beautiful, it sounds like, in addition to that, to the oil, it sounds like it would be a beautiful country if it's an island. And I feel like it's tragic. When I think of an island country, a very beautiful place, I'm sure the tropical climate, am I correct? Beautiful climate.
10 degrees north of the equator.
And yet
beautiful weather all year round, with one rainy season and one dry season, you know, but sun shining, warm weather all year round, beautiful oceans. Between Trinidad and Tobago, there's a Buco Reef, which is a huge coral reef, incredibly beautiful thing. In Trinidad, there's actually a bird sanctuary, Asa Wright Center, which is internationally known as a bird sanctuary, and bird lovers and watchers from all over the world go to this Asa Wright Sanctuary and spend time, vacation time, just watching the birds, you know.
Ecotourism.
Yes, exactly.
So it just seems sort of, you know, like a tragic, rather sad in a way, that such a beautiful country would have this history of, you know, these people coming in wanting the oil and taking over and conquering. And
worse, because I tell people when the big oil spill happened in Louisiana, you know, that was nothing new to Trinidadians. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up as a child, beaches were one of my favorite places to go.
I'm sure there are a lot of them in Trinidad.
There are, but unfortunately, you can't go to them any longer.
Really?
Because the tar has been washing ashore. So I remember this happened, let's see, this was something in... started happening in the late 60s when the first time I went to one of my favorite beaches and walked out into the surf and came back ashore and found that my feet were covered with this black sticky stuff.
So this was coming from the work that the oil companies were doing.
Exactly.
On the land?
In the sea. They were drilling offshore.
Okay.
They were drilling offshore, and they would have spills, and they would just dump stuff into the ocean.
So are there any beaches that are swimmable now there?
I don't think so. I haven't been back to Trinidad for the last, 12 years or so. And I can't bear to go back to Trinidad. I don't think I could stand it. I think I would, I don't know what I would do. I can't stand it. I mean, you know, and when I lived, the last time I lived in Trinidad, you know, I was a 99%er, you know, I still am. But I lived among the people, the ordinary people. You know, I had family who were part of the Trinidadian, they use the Marxist term, the bourgeoisie, you know, although they don't, that's not fashionable anymore to say things like that, right? The 1%.
The 1%, right.
Yeah. The bourgeoisie, I guess it's really, things have changed, you know, the economic structure has changed, so the bourgeoisie, a lot of the bourgeoisie is now in the 99%, so. But they still have some of those bourgeois ideas in going around in their head. They have bourgeois dreams, but they live the 99% reality. For them, it's a nightmare. But, you know.
In Trinidad? Now, are you saying the people of Trinidad Do they have that same mindset that a lot of Americans have? Someday I'm going to be rich too. Someday I'm going to.
Yeah, there is that evil thing called the national lottery. And, you know, I hate the lottery.
Oh, you mean to get into the United States?
Well, there is that too. But there is actually a lottery, just like they have Lotto.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know.
Sorry, yeah.
And there's a gimmick. That's just a big gimmick, you know.
To get money from people.
And more than to get money, to give them, to corrupt them. To
get them gambling.
Dreaming.
Right. Yeah.
So you dream on about getting rich, you fool.
Right, because you know,
but
yeah, because you know, I know that I mentioned to you about Morris Berman, who wrote Dark Ages in America, Why America Failed, and a bunch of other books, and how he talks about Americans, and he's very anti-American, and Americans are corrupt. But it sounds like what you're saying, though, is that people in some other countries also have that same mindset that a lot of Americans have. That
well,
you know, that
Americans didn't just get that mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very carefully and I think quite deliberately and cleverly programmed into them, created into them. You know, they were educated into that mindset. And the same thing happened in Trinidad.
Yes.
I mean, and you see it in the kids now. Mm-hmm. We in Trinidad have the same kinds of problems.
You mean as far as what? As far as kids
far
not
as kids
paying attention to school, violence?
Right, and as far as kids coming out of school with empty heads.
Mm-hmm. Not reading.
Not reading.
Just
not
playing with their iPhones or their iPads.
Right, and
iPods.
Watching the television.
Yeah.
You know, and just totally corrupt. And it's really sad. I mean, I've seen Trinidad just devastated, destroyed. Socially, economically, and environmentally.
And now there are a lot of people who are thinking the United States is falling like the Roman Empire fell. So I wonder if that does happen. Well, I mean, it does seem to be happening. It seems our country's falling. Will that help Trinidad? Or will it hurt Trinidad? Do you think that countries like Trinidad will sort of rejuvenate? You know, will they recoup? Will they get back into their own sense of who they are? Or do you think that that the United States falling and becoming destroyed or imploding in on itself, do you think that that will be reflected in Trinidad, that Trinidad will also implode upon itself since it's got this corporate influence on it? Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I don't think there's much hope for Trinidad. Buccal Reef is dying. The Buccal Reef is dying. The environment is pretty much destroyed. There seems to be this plan on now to finish the job with this tar sands extraction project. And I think that the American empire, maybe you're right, maybe it is collapsing. Mm. But it's going to be a while.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it's going to collapse very slowly. And
do you think
I see the 1% just becoming more desperate. They don't have answers. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is in crisis. They have no answer. And they're simply going to become more desperate and more brutal. Mm-hmm. And the tactics that they use in Trinidad, they're now using here against Americans. And perhaps there is some hope in that Americans will now feel the pinch.
Mm-hmm.
They will feel the boot
mm-hmm.
in their butts, and they'll
realize
that something is wrong. Wait a minute. Whose boot is that?
It's not mine.
No. So, you know, and in the meantime, life in Trinidad pretty much goes on. You have a situation where the economic disparity is much worse than it is here in this country.
Mm.
I remember back in Trinidad, you know, this was in a few years ago, in 80 something maybe, and this friend of mine, or so-called friend, he said to me one time, he said, his father had a business, was making a lot of money, and he said to me, Neil, you know, you better get yours, you know, because I'm getting mine. So
get yours
because
get your
I'm
money, your piece
mine.
Of the pie.
Yeah, yeah. Make your money because I'm making mine, and that's kind of like the prevailing mentality, you know. So, but only a few can get theirs. The majority of people can't get anything. Those people are desperate, and they're looked upon as criminals because they do criminal things. When I lived in Trinidad, a friend of mine told me one evening, we used to work together on the rig, and he wasn't getting work. I was still getting work occasionally because I had a friend who would kind of, you know, say, okay, get on the bus, man.
You knew someone. You had connections.
I had a connection, right. And he didn't. And finally, one day I saw him call out to him, say, yo, man, hey, what's up, man? How are you going? So we talked, and he told me, he said, man, I'm robbing gas stations.
He was robbing gas stations to make
right.
a living, because
right.
that was the only way. Now, do you think that we're going to see a dramatic increase in that happening here in the U.S., people turning to crime because they can't find a job?
Perhaps, but the police are ready in the U.S. They're ready, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there's already a lot of crime and violence. And also there's some people predicting labor camps, you know, and you know, a lot of creepy stuff, you know, like concentration camps.
Prison labor.
And I personally think we're heading in a direction of poor people being rounded up and thrown into prison camps and being forced to work. Because the mindset seems to be, if you're poor, it's your own fault. There's something wrong
exactly.
with you. You should work. Why aren't you working, you know? Well, and I feel like we're headed towards fascism as well. And I just wonder what your thoughts are. Do you feel that way? Do you think we're headed towards fascism? Or are you more hopeful than I am?
We're already there. What do you mean headed towards fascism? We're already there. You know, this is something that I wanted to talk about, to throw out here. I almost forgot. I learned recently that, well, I can't say I learned because I must have always known this, but the significance of it was brought home to me recently, that the United States has been, for the last 10 years or so, actually in a state of war, and the Constitution has been suspended, was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution
mm-hmm.
was suspended. So for the last 10 years, we have been living outside of the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
The government has not publicly promulgated this fact.
But, you know, but any American, you know, who's read the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, and I guess that doesn't comprise very many Americans these days, but I have. I took a political science class in college. I had to study the Constitution and read the Federalist Papers and all that, and the Patriot Act is very much unconstitutional. And really, when George Bush got into power, I was scared to death. And that was, for me, when he got put into power. I mean, he wasn't even really elected. The way that whole thing happened, people being prevented from voting, and the votes not being counted properly, pretty much everything that happened in the Bush administration, to me, was an indication that we were heading into fascism. I mean, I felt that way from the beginning, and just even towards the end of the Clinton administration, when they were trying to take him down, you know, and it just seemed that they were looking for something, and then they found he'd had an affair with someone, and there was just this effort to impeach him. But we couldn't impeach George Bush, who went against the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Really? That's a much more serious crime.
See, that's the thing. I'm looking at this President Obama and what he does. You know, some years ago, there was an article that was printed in the New York Times on one of the inside pages. And this article was a short story about a predator drone, some kind of strike that had been carried out on a group of men who had gathered on a remote hilltop in Afghanistan or Iraq, and the satellite camera had picked up this group and observed that they appeared to be a leader who was a tall, bearded individual, and the people gathered around him, a group of about a dozen men, seemed to be very deferential towards this individual. So the suspicion was that this was Osama bin Laden. So they called in a strike, and they killed those men with a missile. And then they sent in the mop-up crew to gather DNA samples, and they did. And they were very disappointed that it was not Osama bin Laden. And this story was printed in the New York Times with no apology. And I thought, well, we're here, aren't we? Because the American government just summarily executed a group of men with no evidence other than the suspicion that guy looks like it might be Osama bin Laden. So they killed all of these people and they announced it to the world. Hey, you know, we did that, and God damn it, we missed. It wasn't Osama bin Laden. What's really wrong here? So what I'm saying is that I think that this kind of these acts are actually legal. Mm-hmm. They are legal and
outside of the Constitution.
Exactly, because the Constitution has been suspended legally. But here's the thing. They suspended the Constitution secretly. Mm-hmm. Now Congress is supposed to ratify this state of emergency every 6 months. Mm-hmm. But Congress has not been doing that.
Are we still in a state of emergency?
We are. We are still in a state of emergency.
I'm scared.
And Congress has lapsed in that. That's the provision that's built into the system,
right,
that, okay, the president has the power to declare a state of emergency,
right,
on secret grounds. So he doesn't have to tell Congress why,
right,
he needs to have a state of emergency. However, 6 months down the road, he has to then present to Congress sufficient reason for continuing this deal. But that hasn't been happening.
Huh. Interesting. And, the Patriot Act keeps getting renewed. We have a comment here that a commenter comparing Indian reservations to prison camps. And it's true. The Native American people do live in extreme poverty in many of the Indian reservations. And I think that is the future of this country. It seems to be where we're going.
It does.
People living in poverty. And of course, when you're living in poverty, you can't fight back, can you? It's hard to fight back if your government is doing...
You are powerless. I read something interesting recently that some states have been so desperate for cash that they've been selling their prisons to another private corporation. And one of the stipulations of the corporation to these states who are selling their prisons is that the state has an obligation to keep the prison full.
Mm.
Which is...
that means us, doesn't it? For expressing opinions.
Speak for yourself. I don't plan on going there.
You don't plan these things, Mr.
James. I understand. Someone's planning a lot of things
we
don't know about.
And who's behind it? Now, what do you think? I mean, because to me, I think, you know, a wealthy elite who want power. Mr. J, I know you're not very much anti-corporation like I am, are you?
No, I'm 100% with what Neil said. We're already under fascist operation because, by definition, fascism is this cooperation between government and large corporations.
That's one definition, yeah.
That's without trying to describe the details of how that's there, but mm-hmm. the fact that the last thing I heard, there was some reference that there's been a recent court ruling that says that supporting, I don't know if it came out of Monsanto or somewhere else, but the whole thing that no longer can we have these movies and stuff talking about these terrible conditions and the chicken pens and all this other stuff. In other words, freedom of information? I'm sorry, no.
Well, if you watch that documentary, Food, Inc., they show how this woman was intimidated and afraid to speak. She was not allowed to talk about what kind of food she eats. There was a woman in the movie who, she was a conservative Republican, very conformist, very conservative, and her son died after eating a hamburger. And so then she became really interested in food and how the food is being made. And now she's very careful about what she eats, you know, in terms of eating food without preservatives and chemicals in it and whatnot. But she's been intimidated and essentially bullied into not talking about it. So in the movie, they asked her, what do you eat and what don't you eat? And they show her shopping, but she's scared to death to talk about what foods she eat and what foods she don't eat, doesn't eat. And she basically said, well, you know, I have a family. I have to look out for them. And she was implied when she said that she was afraid her family might be in danger if she spoke out, you know, I thought, because she basically said, I don't worry so much about myself. I like to speak my mind, but I do have children. So, you know, I mean, and then that to me is scary. You know, something as simple and basic as food, you know, people are not free to say, I stay away from eating that chicken because it's got hormones in it, and I try to buy the organic chicken. Really? Are we not allowed to say that in public? Because I'm going to say it. I spend the extra few dollars to buy the organic chicken without the hormones. Uh-oh. In a few minutes, we're going to have Homeland Security at the door, so we better...
I was so ashamed of myself recently because I had been tricked into buying eggs from this corporation, Eggland, and they had this big organic label on them, and I only buy organic eggs. And I said, oh, great, Eggland has an organic egg. So I'd been buying it, and a week or so ago, I happened to be reaching into the refrigerator to take out a carton of eggs, and I guess the angle that I was looking at it at from, I saw almost invisible on the big green organic label, TM.
Trademark.
And I just...
They own the eggs.
I was ashamed of myself. I thought, you know, what an idiot. How could you fall for that stupid trick?
Well,
it's not organic.
We all do, yeah.
I know.
We all do.
And the question I have for our legislators and lawmakers and so on is, why do you allow this? Why? I mean, this is patently hypocritical and deceptive, and it's a lie.
Right.
It's a lie. You're allowing this corporation to tell a big fat lie with, you know, what did they do? Cross your fingers behind your back and say it?
Cross
their money.
Yeah, cross the dollars behind their back and say, organic. Yeah. No, it's not. It's not right.
Wait, this conversation is so fascinating, interesting, and yet it's almost 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. So we're probably going to need to end pretty soon, because I know that people have lives to lead, and I know that you, Neil, certainly you have a very busy life, because it's been hard to track you down to get you on this show. So would you be interested in coming back?
If you think I have something interesting to say, I'm happy to share my experiences and my thoughts. I think that, yeah, people really need to wake up in this country. People need to wake up.
Definitely. I totally agree. And we didn't even get to the part about your coming here in the U.S. and your perceptions as a newcomer to this country. So I really wanted to talk to you about that, but I don't want to keep you too long as well, because I know it is kind of getting late. I want to give Mr. J a chance to speak as well. Did you have anything that you wanted to...
I don't want to get on a whole new subject. Like you said, some things will have to wait. I can make one final comment if you wish, but...
What's your comment?
Only that if there's any hope, it's that this financial system out there, which is playing incredible games with derivatives and credit default swaps, it's all funny, phony money, has no connection to reality. It's unsustainable. And because of that, the roots and the foundation of everything is sand ready to flow and destroy.
Now, is that sand that was mined by, what was the company? Was it Omoco? Or was it another company?
Yes, or whoever. But
was it fracked?
No. In other words, we're living on a fallacious fantasy foundation that there's any reality to wealth, as they call it. All that wealth is totally irrelevant. So in a sense, there is hope that if we could step in and go back to some ancient principles that work, that have worked in this country before. But the problem is, people are either apathetic, they're totally discouraged and see no hope, or they're just simply so far gone in whatever form that to actually step in and push the institutions, the government figures, to actually return to our founding fathers' principles becomes questionable. So there is, things cannot continue as they are. So the question is, are we going to be ready to step in and fight for a change when finally the so-called people in power realize how hopelessly stupid they've been in trying to sustain what is unsustainable? Well, anyway, that's my diatribe.
Okay, I just wanted to throw in a quick promo for God Bless America. Bob Cat Goldthwait, comedian's movie in which he basically critiques American culture as well. And we'll play a little bit of that as we trail out from the show. And Mr. Neil Daniel, anything that you wanted to add as we come to the finish line of the show? Are you hopeful?
I am hopeful in this sense. There are good people in this country. There are people who recognize what's going on and are trying to do whatever they can to get us all to a better place. But perhaps it is too late. So my hope really is that, you know, we hold it together, you know, like I told one of my kids yesterday, sometimes I feel like Noah, you know, and the floodwaters are rising. But my hope is that sufficient of us will ride out the flood because we're aware of what's coming and we're grounded in some kind of reality. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to be, hopefully, we're not going to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. You know, when the shit hits the fan, we will survive. And
well, maybe we'll physically survive.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And after that, we'll have the opportunity to start over. This is the famous environmental scientist Lovelock. This is his view, I think. He expressed that that he was talking about global warming, climate change, and he expressed the idea that look, no amount of half measures, you know, hybrid cars and power-saving things and solar panels and so on, none of that is going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. That we're doomed. Because what's necessary is a complete lifestyle change. Hmm. Which means really that the corporations will have to stop doing what they do. They will have to stop. They'll have to recognize that this model is unsustainable. They'll have to stop and deal with things in a real way. But they're not going to do that.
Well, Mr. Neil Daniel, I know you're a very busy person, but we really appreciate your coming on the show, and we hope that you'll come back.
Yeah, I will.
How about in a couple weeks, maybe?
Yep,
you
sure.
Think you can?
Yeah,
okay.
Be in touch on either reason.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to hear about your arrival to the U.S. and your experiences coming here, because we've talked a lot about how you felt back in Trinidad, mm-hmm. about the American countries. American corporations and their influence over your country. We'll probably be back in a couple weeks or so around this time. It's usually Sunday evenings around 6 o'clock or so Eastern Standard Time, give or take a bit. Sometimes it's a little later than this. We have day jobs, so what are you going to do? And you can also listen to us by going to talkshoe.com and searching for Occupy Buffalo, or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio for the number 4, not the word. all.net and search under Occupy Buffalo and you'll find us there. And so we're going to sign out. But as we sign out, we're actually going to listen to and watch the trailer for God Bless America. It's a new movie that's just come out by Bobcat Goldthwait. It's very funny. It's about a guy who's disenchanted with American culture, and he gets violent about it. So Americans are going to love this movie because there's a lot of violence in it. Sorry to say, a good little critique on my own people here, but I know my people are going to love this movie.
Press that just gives him a free pass.
The boys were caught after setting the homeless man on fire.
Did you mother in my room?
What?
You fire!
A tumor this size is very dangerous. Do you have any family?
On YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube.
Hey, Creepy. Isn't the schoolgirl thing a little played out?
Don't make it sound.
If you want the car, just take it. My parents got me the wrong one anyways.
Yeah, that's a fucking tragedy.
Did you just kill Chloe? Awesome. That was a fantastic start.
But you know who else really rips my cock off?
The Kardashians.
People who use rock star as an adjective.
Women who call their tits
the girls.
Anyone who wears crystals.
Aiming at the bear, right?
This is the best day ever! Frank, don't. Let me.
I'm recording this. Thanks for turning off your cell phone.
You're welcome.
Why have a civilization if we're no longer interested in being civilized?
Hey, buddy. What's wrong?
A lot of crazy people out there. I only want to kill people who deserve to die.
We gonna do this or what?
I know it's not normal to want to kill, but I am no longer normal.
You really gotta take both those spots?
Yeah.
Fuck you.